From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast.
This is MC Fontaine, welcoming you to another Bletchley Park podcast extra. This week we have the second and concluding part of Bob Horner's talk, Malta, George Cross, 1940 to 1942, The Battle for Survival. Last week Bob left us at the start of 1942, a dark time for the survival of Malta. He now continues with the story of one of the most pivotal moments during all of the resupplying of Malta, Operation Pedestal.
In 1941, most merchant ships got through. This changed drastically in 1942. After February, only one merchant ship reached Malta safely, although some fuel was salvaged from another that nearly made it in March. The Royal and Royal Australian Navy ships escorting were taking losses as well. The entry for MW10 leaves much unsaid. Two ships, Talabot and Pampas, arrived, and unloading started using Maltese stevedores, said to be much faster workers than inexperienced servicemen. But work was suspended overnight. The following day, both ships were set on fire during air raids, with Talabot being scuttled. Out of 16,000 tons of cargo, only 1,800 tons had been discharged. A further 5,000 tons was ultimately recovered. In addition to the submarine's running supplies was the fast mine layer HMS Welshman. This ship could achieve 40 knots. The failure of Operation Vigorous, when after repeated air surface and U-boat attacks, the convoy turned back, left the islands in a difficult state, which steadily became desperate. The Axis was sending over 200 to 300 aircraft a day, and by mid-April the RAF only had 6 fighters fully operational at any one time. Food and fuel were being rationed for the garrison and the population on the lowest possible scale. The governor took to a bicycle to save fuel, and many troops patrolled on cycles rather than in vehicles. In the UK, the Admiralty put together a plan to run a fast convoy from Greenock to Malta. This was Operation Pedestal. 13 fast general cargo liners, 11 British and 2 American, all of which were capable of 16 knots, were identified and sent to the Clyde area, where they were fitted with additional anti-aircraft armament. During the war, most merchant ships carried some, for which they were provided with small naval parties to operate them. The ships were each loaded with a mix of supplies of aviation spirit and kerosene in 4-gallon cans. Some ships carried lorries laden with fuel lashed to the decks. They also had all manner of ammunition, foodstuffs, flour, bagged coal, etc. There were even small quantities of luxuries, chocolates, cigarettes and wine. The theory was that even if only one ship got through, then at least the islands would have something of everything. The 14th ship had to be an exception to this rule. The American-built and recently reflagged 2-year-old tanker Ohio, owned by the Eagle Oil and Shipping Company of London, was to carry the bulk of Malta's fuel requirements. This was a mix of 13,610 tons of diesel, oil, kerosene, fuel oil, bunker fuel, and lubricating oils. On the evening of the 2nd of August, the ships sailed from the Clyde, and once out of the river, formed up into 4 columns, escorted by the cruisers HMS Nigeria and Kenya, and some destroyers. Commodore Venables was in Port Chalmers. When dawn broke on the morning of the 3rd, the size of the complete escort dawned on the merchant seamen. It was of biblical proportions. For security reasons, most had only learnt after sailing that the destination was Malta, and now many felt a sense of pride as they saw the ships that the Royal Navy had turned out to protect the convoy. There are 59 ships, although not all of them were present all of the time. Let's try to break it down. The senior officer was Vice Admiral Siffrey in HMS Nelson, which, with its sister ship Rodney, was armed with 9 of the biggest guns in the Royal Navy. HMS Indomitable was, at 9 months old, the newest carrier in the Navy, with HMS Victorious only a few months older. HMS Furious was going to fly off 38 more Spitfires in Operation Bellows. the carriers were going to use the operation to practice large-scale manoeuvrings, and HMS Argus was temporarily attached for Operation Berserk. The force would detach at Cape Bon in Tunisia as the convoy turned south. This was referred to in the planning as the Narrows, and the convoy would change shape from four short columns to two double the length, with the escorts close in. They had to avoid Vichy French Tunisia on their right and Italian Pantelleria on their left. Force X was the official escort, Force Z being known as the covering force. Until Cape Bon, the entire force was commanded by Vice Admiral Seyfray, and now command would pass to Rear Admiral Burrow in HMS Nigeria. His responsibility was to get Pedestal's merchant ships alongside in Valletta. Frequently, it was the practice for escorting warships to refuel from a tanker that was part of the convoy being escorted. Ohio's fuel was required in Malta, so Force R, two Royal Fleet auxiliary tankers with their own anti-submarine escort of corvettes, was supplied. HMS Argus wasn't part of the operation, but had been included to exercise with the other carriers, and she had to return to Scapa Flow, for which she was supported by Force W. And finally, there were a couple of unattached destroyers, and thinking of everything, the brand new Admiralty tug Jaunty. Having left the Clyde, the convoy turned right, keeping Malin Head on their left, and sailed down the Atlantic coast of Ireland, zigzagging as they went against defence against the sizeable submarine threat during a period known as the second happy time for the U-boats. During the passage, Vice Admiral Seyfray put the ships through all sorts of evolutions that would be required to equip them for the welcome that they would receive, and it is said that the convoy manoeuvred so professionally that the merchant ships were manoeuvring like naval ones. Off the Strait of Gibraltar on the 8th of August, the five aircraft carriers carried out Operation Berserk, in which they practiced manoeuvring together. They also flew their aircraft at and past all the various ships in the convoy to give the anti-aircraft gunners practice in aiming and also being able to positively identify friendly aircraft in what was likely to be a very confused battle. HMS Argus, her tanker and two corvettes, then detached from the force. Overnight on the 9th and 10th, the convoy reformed into two columns to transit the Strait of Gibraltar. Fortunately, it was foggy, which will have hampered German spies in Spain. Once through, the convoy reformed into its four columns, with its escort meticulously arranged in a huge circle around the merchant ships. At Italian naval headquarters in Rome, it was clear that something massive was happening. Supermarina arranged for a mixed force of submarines to deploy on the likely route from the Balearics to Tunisia, and another group were to operate northwest of Cape Bon in connection with bombing missions. The route off Cape Bon was to be mined, something not done until now, because Italian convoys also used that water. Italian MAS boats and German E-boats would operate between Cape Bon and Pantelleria, and six cruisers and 11 destroyers would mop up anything that might still try to break through to Malta. Once through the strait, the tankers of Force R topped up the warships. The merchant ships would have all the fuel they required. First blood went to the Germans when, in the morning of the 11th, the submarine U-73 sank HMS Eagle. Fortunately, a high proportion of her ship's company were rescued. The same morning, HMS Furious executed Operation Bellows and launched her 38 Spitfires on their one-way trip to Malta. 37 made it, and the other was recovered to HMS Indomitable. Having no more aircraft, she turned back for Gibraltar with a destroyer escort. That day, there were four air raids, and HMS Indomitable was hit and couldn't fly her aircraft. On the 12th, HMS Ithuriel rammed and sank the Italian submarine Cobalto. There were four more air raids, and only HMS Victorious could operate aircraft. Later, Pedestal reached Cape Bon and the Narrows, and in accordance with the plan, Force Z turned back, leaving Rear Admiral Burrow and Force X to marshal the ships into two lines. This was never quite achieved, because by now Deucalion, in position 11, had been damaged in an air raid and was being escorted along the Tunisian coast by HMS Bramham and the tug Jaunty. Another air raid that evening sank Deucalion. At 20:00, during an air raid, the Italian submarine Axum torpedoed the flagship HMS Nigeria, put out of action, and the cruiser HMS Cairo, which had to be sunk by our own forces. Rear Admiral Burrow transferred to the less-than-ideal destroyer Ashanti. Axum then hit the jackpot, by torpedoing the tanker Ohio portside amidships. Brilliant damage control isolated the damaged area, and the fire was out in 5 minutes. Ohio was stopped for about an hour, but the others ploughed on. Hearing of the disaster, Vice Admiral Seafray and Force Z, now heading west, sent the cruiser HMS Charybdis and three destroyers east to reinforce the convoy escort. Later there was another air raid. This time Empire Hope and Clan Ferguson was sunk, and HMS Kenya had her bow shattered, but after shoring up, she was able to make 25 knots. Brisbane Star took a torpedo hit in the bow and detached from the convoy to take the coastal route past Vichy French Tunisia. At about 1 a.m. on the 13th, the convoy was attacked by 10 Italian and 2 German torpedo boats. They scored hits on HMS Manchester, which was scuttled 2 hours later, leading to the eventual, controversial court-martial of her captain. By now, Ohio, which had stopped following the attack, was at the rear, escorted by the destroyer HMS Ledbury. Dorset and Rochester Castle, finding themselves alone and ahead of the other ships, opted to take the Sicilian Channel to the north of Pantelleria. At 2 a.m., torpedo boats sank Glenorchy, and half an hour later, Wairangi suffered the same fate. Half an hour later, Almeria Leixs was torpedoed by German E-boats and was abandoned, some say prematurely. Finally, Santa Elisa was torpedoed forward by an Italian torpedo boat and suffered an explosion, causing the order to abandon ship. Admiral Burrow in HMS Ashanti spotted Rochester Castle following Dorset and ordered her to rejoin the convoy. On the way, the Union Castle cargo liner shot up a stopped Italian torpedo boat, but later Rochester Castle was torpedoed, but with excellent damage control, rejoined the convoy at 4:15 a.m. The ships were now being led by the cruiser HMS Charybdis, detached from Force Z, but the Admiral decided not to move from Ashanti. At 8 a.m., the convoy was attacked by German Ju-88 aircraft, and Waimarama exploded in a sheet of flame with a vast pool blazing on the water, which Melbourne Star couldn't avoid sailing through. Ohio received further attacks, and her bow was torn open. An hour later, another raid on Ohio was fought off by her own gunners and from destroyers. However, that did not stop a Stuka, which she'd shot down, from crashing forward of the bridge and exploding. Dorset, that had taken the northern route, was catching the convoy and got caught up in the attacks. HMS Bramham was standing by. Ohio suffered machinery failure and could barely make 2.5 knots. The destroyer HMS Penn was doing all she could for the tanker and eventually passed a tow line. However, damaged plating on Ohio was acting as a rudder, and the two ships just went round in circles until the tow parted. Captain Mason of Ohio was persuaded to temporarily abandon the tanker, and he followed his crew to HMS Penn. They were 60 miles from Malta. Port Chalmers with Commodore Venables caught Rochester Castle and Melbourne Star, and Force X took them to within sight of Malta, where they were met by light forces from Malta and escorted into harbour. Rear Admiral Burrow now considered that the best thing to do was to take Force X back to Gibraltar immediately, leaving Penn, Bramham and Ledbury to look after Ohio and Dorset. He sent a message to Ohio, "Proud to have met you." At 1800, the minesweeper HMS Rye and light forces from Malta reached Ohio, and having asked for volunteers, Captain Mason and his entire crew reboarded, together with other volunteers. Their preparations for the tow included throwing all the remains of the crashed Stuka over the side. At 1830, Axis aircraft attacked again, and Malta Spitfires laid into them. At 1900, 4 Ju-88s attacked Dorset, setting her on fire and sinking her in 20 minutes. HMS Bramham then headed for Ohio. HMS Ledbury, having been on a fruitless mission to find HMS Manchester, headed for Ohio. There now followed a gargantuan fight to get the tanker to Malta before she surrendered, not to the Axis, of course, but to the sea. Captain Mason became seriously concerned that Ohio would break her back and that the engine room would fall off. It should be noted that the seamen working constantly weren't just from the ships involved, but many were survivors from other ships, all volunteers. While all this was going on, Brisbane Star had been creeping along the Tunisian coast, and she eventually agreed a rendezvous with light forces from Malta at 0820 on the 14th. At 15:15, Brisbane Star, which had narrowly avoided arrest by the Tunisian authorities, entered Grand Harbour. Now four had arrived. Back at Ohio, the battle to save the ship, well, the cargo, really, continued. Over the next few hours, more air attacks were fought off by gunners from all the ships, including Ohio, and with Malta Spitfires helping. The warships tugged and nudged their helpless charge towards Valletta. At various times, different ships towed or were lashed to the tanker, which only had 18 inches freeboard in places. For the benefit of landsmen, that's the distance between the lowest open deck and the surface of the sea. Early in the morning of the 15th of August, Ohio and her Royal Navy rescuers entered Grand Harbour. She was nudged into Biggie Bay and berthed alongside RAF Plumleaf. Work started immediately to discharge her cargo, and she eventually sank at her mooring. In this account of a pivotal event in the history of Malta and the war in the Mediterranean, I've had to be selective. The planning for this operation allowed for just one cargo ship arriving. Four made it and unloaded their precious supplies. And although Ohio lost all her diesel, the policy of carrying some fuel in 4-gallon cans on the merchant ships would have mitigated that loss. Had Ohio been lost, then Malta could not have supported naval forces, and its ability to defend itself in the air would have been gravely affected. I've had to overlook some contributions, and they include the 10th Submarine Flotilla, patrolling west of Malta and north of Sicily. I haven't mentioned the final thrust of Italian cruisers and destroyers, because it was a damp squib, and HMS Unbroken permanently crippled two cruisers as they fled home. The air battle was relentless and confused, with heroism and losses on both sides. And finally, I have undoubtedly under-recognised Malta's minesweeping and coastal forces. It may not look like it, but this was a victory. The ships, and far more tragically their men, were expendable for the greater good. Their sacrifice and those killed and wounded in surviving ships and the airmen meant that Malta's near-starving population were fed, and the island was quickly onto an aggressive war footing. Several people received decorations and honours. Vice Admiral Seafray and Rear Admiral Burrow were knighted, but probably the most popular award was that to Captain Dudley Mason, Master of the Ohio. His George Cross, the highest possible award to a civilian, was announced in the London Gazette of the 8th of September. So what of Malta after Pedestal? The Blitz gradually petered out. Supplies arrived by irregular convoys, and only two more merchant ships were lost. The Axis finally abandoned plans to invade, and the RAF started to raid Sicily. In January 1943, the Naval Force K was reconstituted at Malta. On the 20th of June, King George VI visited the island. But the price paid by the people of Malta was high. It is hard to do justice with figures to the misery that this must represent. That they weren't even higher is a reflection on the indefatigable spirit of the people of Malta and the bravery, ingenuity, and determination of all people charged with defending and resupplying them. What an amazing story. Thank you so much indeed for coming, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for listening. Why not follow our channel on Audioboo, where you can also subscribe to the RSS feed? Or you can subscribe to us in iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter, where we're at @BParkPodcast, or join the Bletchley Park Facebook group. And of course, we must thank Audioboo, who make this podcast possible.